text tonight is in Luke chapter 18, and I'm going to begin reading in verse 9 and read down through verse 14. Let's begin with that, and we'll make some remarks. Luke chapter 18, beginning in verse 9. And he also told this parable to some people who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and viewed others with contempt. Two men went up into the temple to pray. One, a Pharisee, and the other, a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and was praying this to himself: God, I thank you that I am not like other people, swindlers, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I pay tithes of all that I get. But the tax collector, standing some distance away, was even unwilling to lift up his eyes to heaven, but was beating his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, the sinner. I tell you, this man went to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but he who humbles himself will be exalted. That's the parable for tonight. It's where we're going to be together in just a few moments. Thank you for being together here. There are really important people in my life in this audience tonight. Preachers of the gospel that I have known for some time. I remember the only meeting I held at New Caney, Bullenbarkers were there and took me in, took care of me during that meeting, and we developed a wonderful friendship in a very short period of time. It's great to see the extended Lopez family. They just keep enlarging their tents and spreading them out. In the audience tonight is my best friend from childhood. We grew up together, played baseball against each other, went to college together. He was my roommate there. He's preaching the gospel in Bull Verde, Texas right now. And Mark and Judy surprised me coming over this evening, all the way from the San Antone area. And others of you have come distances. Even when you don't come outside of Houston, you come a distance. I know that. But what a joy. What a joy it is for us to be together tonight. Thank you for being here. And I hope that when we're done, that you will say it was good to have been here. That there will be benefit from what we're looking at together in the text. We're looking at Jesus' parables, his stories, told again for the first time. And the reason, as I said this already yesterday, that I want to talk to you about these parables in that context is, and this one is certainly exemplary of what I'm about to say, we've heard these things over and over and over again. And we just kind of rush through them. Yeah, I know this one. This one's about the man who prayed, two men who prayed, and one of them was humble and he was justified, and the other man went home and wasn't justified because he was a Pharisee, and that's all we need to know. But there is much in this parable, and much of it turns on little phrases and words that Jesus uses intentionally. The words are important in this particular parable. Because when you hear it and look at the two people as described until you get to the end, you're not sure who the hero and the villain is. That's not real obvious. It's not like the old cowboy movies when I was a kid. You could always tell who the good guys were. They always wore white hats. Bad guys always wore dark clothing. They were menacing looking. But you could always tell the good guys from the bad guys in the movies. So, in this particular parable, that's not always easy, because the parable starts out telling us that there's a Pharisee and a tax collector. Now, if all you knew was the culture of Israel, you would have said the righteous man's Pharisee and the tax collector's the bad guy. Because that's the way everybody thought of them. In fact, Jesus even talked about sinners and publicans in the same breath. So it looks like, on the surface, that the good guy is the righteous man, the Pharisee, and the bad guy is the tax collector. Two men went up to pray. Two of them are going. And if you were to look at them both coming into the area to pray, and I ask you, pick out the one who's good, you would not have pointed at the tax collector. You would not have. He's the bad guy. And I don't want to go into a lot of detail about that, but there was a good reason to assume that they were. The tax collectors of that day were considered to be legal robbers. They worked for the Roman government. And they took their cut of what they lived off of from the very people they called their brethren. They were pariah and piranhas. And they were the worst. And the other man is a tax collector. Now, for the Jews, the tax collectors were very clear. It was very clear to them who they were. Not quite as clear about Pharisees, but I'll say this typically about the Pharisees. They were respected. They were very outwardly religious. You could tell one coming. They were a bit condescending to other people, pretty arrogant about their faith, but then they had developed themselves to such a degree of their knowledge of Israel's spiritual heritage and history that they felt like they had earned that, and most people deferred to them that way. They were considered to be pretty proud and aloof from other people, but that was understandable because that's what their very name meant. The Pharisees were the separatists. They kept themselves apart from other people. So you might view them the way we might view a doctor. If you're in a hospital, or even if you go to a doctor's office, it's kind of interesting. A lot of times you go into the doctor's office, they send you back into a room, and they tell you to take your clothes off. Doesn't matter what you're going to have done or what you're there for, just take your clothes off. I think that's a way of intimidating us, frankly. But when the doctor comes into the room, you're not real sure. Should I shake his hand? Am I tainted? No. Should I just nod at him? Cover up? Because if I extend my hand and shake it, I've had this happen. I shake hands. Hi, doctor. I'm Ralph Walker. And he shakes my hand and immediately turns around and pumps. So, what's going on, Mr. Walker? They kind of go through the gyrations of sterility. Well, if you treat doctors that way because they need a sterile environment, then you would have probably understood why the Pharisees didn't inhabit certain places, didn't go to some parts of town, didn't associate with some people. It was their way of practicing spiritual sterility. Keep themselves clean. the tax collector would have been despised, the Pharisee would have been maybe not admired, but certainly respected. And the one thing we might have said about tax collectors is, well, they at least are useful as the lowest man on the social ladder. Does that make sense? I mean, it didn't matter where you were or what you were better than the tax collectors. They were like my mother one time said to me when she got really frustrated with me. She just got fed up and she said, you know what, son? If you can't do anything else in life, at least you can serve as a bad example. The tax collectors were kind of like that. They just kind of served as bad examples. Everybody felt better when they were around them because they were above them. And they could always make you thankful you weren't them. The prayer that this Pharisee offers, though he uttered it in words, was probably on the hearts of a lot of people. I'm thankful. At least I'm not like this tax collector. But we've already read through to the end of the story, and we know that the Pharisee's not the good guy. But let's go back and look at the clues that tell us why he wasn't. It says the Pharisee stood, and that standing isn't necessarily a clue because it doesn't say that the tax collector knelt. But he stood, and it says he prayed to himself. The New International Version says he prayed about himself. That's what the NIV says. He prayed about himself. And I have to tell you, I think he's probably using prayer the way sometimes we use prayer. We forget that we're supposed to be talking to God, and we talk to each other, or we talk about ourselves. I've heard sometimes brothers lead prayers, and they use the prayer to inform people of what they ought to do. Lord, give us a heart to visit the sick members of this congregation better than we're doing. And Lord, help us to remember Sister Jones, who's in Baptist Hospital, room 304, during visiting hours from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Help us, Lord, to go see her. Because what this man prayed is not anything that A, God doesn't know, or that God needs to hear. God, I thank you that I'm not like other people. But everything that he talks about is a clear indication that he holds himself responsible for what he has, that it's not due to God. And we only know that because of the things he chooses and then the thing he says about himself later. He says, I thank you I'm not like other people. Swindlers, unjust, adulterers. Notice the kind of things he leaves off of that. Hypocrite. Unmerciful, demanding. He leaves those off because those kind of characterize his heart. But what he takes is, Lord, I'm not like other people in these overt ways. And then we know that he's really talking about his own virtues when he says, I fast twice a week, I pay tithes of all I get. Who's that for? You don't think God knows that? God doesn't know that he fasts twice a week. That God knows he pays tithes from what he has. Nobody knows that better. Oh boy, I love Jesus telling us that when he talks about the widow who gave the two small coins, and he says she's given more than all these other people. He knew exactly what the tallies were on all of that. I am thankful I'm a self-made man. God, thank you for making me a self-made man. That's really what he is saying. So he did pray about himself. This is about him. And he only took note of others to measure himself against them. There's no thought of praying for anybody else except in terms of, well, I'm thankful I'm not like this guy. I'm thankful I'm not like these other people. Regarding fasting, Jesus made a comment about that in Matthew chapter 6 when he talked about fasting. He said, don't be like the hypocrites, because they, when they fast, they make themselves look really gaunt and drawn, as if they've really been engaged in heavy fasting, doing without. And they want you to notice that, so you'll ask about it. That's what they want. So it might be akin to this for us. You're sitting next to somebody in an assembly, and all of a sudden your stomach rumbles a little bit. All of our stomachs can do that at some given time. And we say, I'm sorry, excuse me, I've been fasting for the past couple of days. It's my stomach, I can't help it. That fasting, grumbling, you know how it is. The Pharisees could find some way to make that obvious. Forgive me for looking so gaunt and drawn. Well, what's the matter? You sick? No, just fasting. You know, man, do it all the time. And we go from him to this other man that's described in really one brief sentence, a tax collector. And listen to the word, but the tax collector. First, there's that clear difference between the two, the but. Here's one guy, but the tax collector. We know that we're going to see a contrast. What is the contrast? Well, you've already seen one, Pharisee, tax collector, but it goes into much more detail than that. Standing some distance away. Why would he be standing a distance away? Because he doesn't feel good about himself. Doesn't feel like he can join the others. He's happy to be on the fringe of everything that's happening here. He needs to be here. He needs to pray. But he doesn't feel like he can enter into the company of other people because he's not the person he ought to be. He knows that. Some distance away. And I'll tell you what's interesting about that. If there are a lot of people at the time of prayer that are there, it's interesting to me that the Pharisee could look all the way across that group of people and pick out the tax collector. Or even like that tax collector. Not like him back there in the corner. Not like him. Some distance away. Was even unwilling to lift up his eyes to heaven. Now we have our practices of prayer. We tell children from the time they're small, and we probably don't get very far away from it when we're adults. Close your eyes, bow your head, we're about to pray. But that clearly was not the practice of the Israelites when he says here, lifting his eyes up to heaven. They would look to where they're praying. This man wouldn't do that. He's praying the way we tell children to pray, the way sometimes we even tell each other to pray. Bowed. But for him, it's not a rote thing. It is the call of his heart. I am unwilling to even look to the realm of God. And then it says this. He was beating his breast. He is pounding his chest, beating himself. as he prays to God. It is self-punishment that he is engaging. He feels responsible for what he is. He is beating himself. And then his words, God, be merciful to me. Pronoun here, the sinner. Not God be merciful to me, one among many sinners, the sinner. We talk about Jesus being the Son of God and how exclusive that is. We are sons and daughters of God, but Jesus is the Son of God. This man had concluded about himself, I am the sinner. That's all I can say about myself. God, I bring nothing but a request for you to be merciful to me. Nothing. But when we hear that, when we read that, I still tell you, the first time you hear this parable and really think about it, verse 14 still shocks us. Because we're looking at a man, now here's the point, and I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to really try to get into your heart tonight with a message that is not comfortable for most of us. But we've had a description of two people. And one of them is living a pretty outwardly righteous life. And the other is despicable in his livelihood. He is considered a professional crook. It's his job. And he has not come here today. He has not come here saying, Lord, be merciful to me. I am quitting my tax collecting business. That's not what he's saying. He's not saying, I come and I've thrown everything away and now I want to be what you want me to be. If we looked at those two people in that place of prayer and we didn't know this parable already, we didn't know the end of it, if we didn't, we would still say, I'm not crazy about the Pharisee's prayer. I like the tax collector's prayer better. But when you line up their lives, move past this moment, and the Pharisee's the good guy. And at best, we might muster a grudging assent that, okay, all right, the tax collector has a good prayer here, no question. Maybe he's turning his life around. Both of them get to go home justified. We'll bring the Pharisee down a little bit because he's a little condescending and arrogant and too self-confident. And we'll bring the tax collector up a step because he is showing humility and a request for mercy. He knows he's a sinner. So we'll bring this one down and this one up, and they end up on the same playing field, and they both go home justified. That's really where most of us would probably end up. And for Jesus then to say, this tax collector went home justified, but the other man didn't, just knocks the props out from everything most of us have lived our lives practicing. We somehow find a way to identify with the tax collector in the parable, but I think it's because we like the ending for the tax collector. But in reality, I'm not sure we feel that we're where he is. I think most of us are much more in fellowship with the Pharisee than the tax collector. And it says in verse 9, he told this parable to some people who trusted in themselves that they were righteous, and then viewed others with contempt. So if we were a Pharisee hearing Jesus tell this, He'd get to the end of the story. He'd get to the end of it. He'd say, and this man went justified, and the other man didn't. We'd go, I'm not sure about that. We'd go out, and if Jesus was in that foyer shaking hands, a lot of us would say, I'm going to have to think about that one. I'm not real sure about that. I'm not positive I see it the way you do. So let's come back to the parable. Let's come back to it. And let's walk in the sanctimonious sandals of the Pharisees for a moment. Let's try to view this the way the Pharisee might have when he heard Jesus tell this. Because he comes to the end and says, this man went to his house justified rather than the other. Rather than. Clear contrast. Not on the same playing field. Rather than. I think the Pharisee hearing that might have said to Jesus, hey, why me, Lord? Why'd you pick me for that parable? For that story? Why would you single me out? I'm trying to live for God. I do that all the time. And we know what tax collectors are like. We all would question their salvation. Why would you pick two people like that? If I may put it in terms I think we'd understand, it would be like my saying, I want to tell you a story about two people. One of them's name is Don Hooten, and the other one is the worst prostitute in town. And then I go telling the story, and I say, and the prostitute pleased God, but Don didn't. I mean, not only Don, and not only his wife, but a lot of you would say, well, wow, why would you pick him? He's a good guy. And what a comparison. But the Pharisee needed to hear that. I think he would wonder why God wouldn't like him. What do you have against me? I'm just doing my spiritual life here. I'm just trying to be a good guy. Why would you pick on me? Look at his credentials again. There's nothing blatantly wrong with this man. He's not a serial killer. He hasn't done something under the table that nobody else knows about. He's pretty much what he appears to be on the surface. He does tithe, and he does fast. He is rigorous in his pursuits of outward righteousness. He has all that together. And I'm going to tell you something. You and I would trust him. We'd buy a used car from him. We would let him babysit our children. We would unlock the door of our house for him. If he came by and we weren't home, we'd say, here's the garage code, go on in. There's nothing about this man that would make us say, I don't trust him. I don't like him. And I've got to tell you, that's the kind of thing that we tout about ourselves as indicators of our character, isn't it? Hey, I trust you. I'd loan my car to you. Of course I would. I had a really interesting incident that happened not too long ago. I was in a restaurant with some preachers. And we were all sitting together, and all of a sudden the heavens opened up and the worst storm ever began, just torrents of rain sheeting down the windows. And there was a group of women that were over on the other side, and they all jumped up, and one of them had a small baby, and she started putting the baby in the carrier, and they were all talking. She was saying, I don't know how I'm going to get to my car. It's out there in the rain. I mean, it is pouring rain. And they're all looking, and they open the door, and they're all, oh, no, we're not going to do this. And one of the guys that was at our table jumped up, and he ran over to them, and he said, where is your car? Which one is it? Cheap? Use the little whooper, you know, whoop, whoop, use that. So he could see which one it was. He said, give me the keys. I'll get your car and drive it up under the overhang so that you can get your baby in the car without getting wet. He just took off in the rain with her keys. And I said, she said, that is so nice of him. I said, he's been that way ever since he got out of parole. And then she, and I said, no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. You see, the Pharisees, the guy we'd trust like that. We wouldn't even think twice about it. He's an overtly good guy. So how does he earn this place in this story? He is strenuous in his activity, more so than most of us. I'm not sure most of us, if we were honest, would say we tithe. Or that we fast twice a week. There's a lot to commend him. And he is somewhat grateful. He says, I thank you, Lord, that I'm not like these others. There is a small sense of gratitude in him for what he is. I'm going to tell you something else about him that's true of us. And it's dangerous. He believes if everybody was like him, the world would be a better place to live. And so do you. You believe. There are times when I'm driving on the road and I think, if every driver was just like me, man, we'd be making good time and everybody'd be kind, everybody'd be waving everybody else in and smiling. And when we got waved in, we'd turn around and say, thank you, which is really important to me. If I let you in, you better wave. Thank you. And I won't take the cell phone. Buddy, I don't like that little pinky thing. Put that down and express some gratitude to me for letting you in. But I'm going to tell you something. If everybody was like me on the road, it'd be a disaster. Because while those are my better traits, I've got others that aren't so good. But we tend to think the world would be a better place if everybody was just like me. And we deceive ourselves. This Pharisee was deceiving himself. Here's what's wrong with the Pharisee. His religion, his faith is holding God at a distance. He doesn't really need God. Not really. He is not approaching God like the tax collector, as one who has nothing to give in this exchange program for forgiveness of sins, except to offer himself broken as he is. There is no real appeal to God to draw near to him. He doesn't say anything about God. You come to me. Please, come dwell with me. That's what the tax collector's saying. The Pharisee never utters that. Be merciful to me, the sinner. Come near to me in mercy. That's what the tax collector's asking of his God. The Pharisee never gets to that point. And in addition to holding God at a distance, and he would not have said that, he would not have uttered the words that way, I don't need God. But look at his prayer again, because everything he is dependent on himself. He also holds others at a distance. He doesn't want to get involved in the lives of other people. And he judges himself by tangibles. Now listen, here's where we're hitting home. He judges his own righteousness by outward tangibles. So if somebody came to you and said, are you you're kind of a religious person? And you would say, oh yeah, I try to be. And they said, well, what does that mean to you? What are the kinds of things that we talk about? I go to church. Go to church a lot? Well, yeah. Every time the doors are open. Or I'm there 3 times a week. Or as often as I can. What other things are indicative of your religious nature? I read my Bible. I give to the Lord's church and to his work. I give money to that. I do it regularly. You hearing any similarities between us and somebody in the story? We're judging our righteousness by things we do. And I'm not sure we'd be comfortable if somebody said, "Are you religious?" "Yes." "Yes, I am." "Well, what does that mean for you?" I'll tell you what it means. I'm nothing and God is everything. That's what it means to me. It's what my faith calls me to. I've died to self and I live to Jesus. I'm alive to him. It's easy to measure the tangibles like tithing and fasting. Those are easy. You can measure exactly what you do. That's why he doesn't say, "I fast regularly." He says, "I fast twice a week." He knows exactly what the parameters of that are. And tithing's very clear. It's 10%. And he knows exactly what he does. But I'll tell you what he doesn't get into. And what we're a little more reluctant to get into. The intangibles. Like loving people. Like being forgiven. And demonstrating that forgiveness to others. Being merciful to people. Those are intangibles. We can't say, I'm a faithful follower of Jesus Christ. I love 75%. You can't really judge that. But measuring ourselves by tangibles or by others is comfortable. Because you know what? In almost every case, when we try to measure ourselves by other people, we don't pick people better than ourselves. We can always find somebody like I was as a bad example. "Well, I'm better than him." And then we can feel good about that because we found somebody that's worse off than we are. Reminds me of the football coach who was also the basketball coach, who was also the track coach, who was also the coach for the volleyball team in his high school. He did it all, and he was really into the sports. But he did love football. He loved football. And his wife got tired of the constant time he spent at the school. He was always reviewing other teams, and he was practicing, and he was always looking at how his team could be better. And one day she said to him, "You know what? I think you love football more than you love me." And he said, "Yeah, but I love you better than volleyball." Does that make you feel better? Do you feel better because you're better than somebody else that's clearly the lower half of everything you're looking at? It shouldn't. Because that's what the Pharisee does. In 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 7 and 12, the Apostle Paul says, "You are looking at things as they are outwardly. If anyone is confident in himself that he is Christ's, let him consider this again within himself, that just as he is Christ's, so also are we. Let such a person consider this, that what we are in words by letters when absent, such persons we are also indeed when present." And then he makes, and I turn too soon away from it, go back to it, because here's what he says then in verse 12. "We are not bold to class or compare ourselves with some of those who commend themselves, but when they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they're without understanding." It's easy for us to do that. That's what the Pharisee does. "I'm better than this person. I'm better than that person." Well, I may not be all I ought to be, you might be saying even to this lesson, but I'm better than a lot of people. They're not even here. So what we need to remember is that second part of verse 9. That they viewed others with contempt. In In 1 John chapter 4, verse 20, John says, you can't love God whom you have not seen if you don't love your brother whom you have seen. Be careful about holding others in contempt to make ourselves look better or more comfortable with what we are or we have. So here's the conclusion. You and I have got to seek God as sinners. Listen, not applicants. We're not applying for a job in the kingdom of God. When we apply for a job, what we're doing is saying why we ought to get the job, because we can do this and we can do that, and I can work these hours and I can give you what you want. That's application. But that's not the way we come to the Lord. We come to the Lord broken. We come to the Lord bereft of all that we have. We come naked. We come begging. We come hungry. And that's the difference in the Pharisee and the tax collector. We need to be careful that we do not, like the Pharisee, live in this realm that we really are pretty good people. And there are a couple of things we need to tweak about our lives. And I'm not saying we don't do things for the Lord and aren't valuable to the Lord's cause. We are. But the heart still has to come saying, I need God's mercy. I'm not thanking Him for what I've made of myself. I am begging Him to deliver me from what I have made of myself. Deliver me from me. And if that message means something to you tonight, maybe in your own prayer closet, you need to talk to God like the tax collector, not the You need to demonstrate the heart of the man who went down to his house justified rather than the other, which is the person I'm afraid I have been too many times. I need that parable. I need to hear what Jesus said to the Pharisee so that I can be more of the heart of the tax collector. You need prayers? You need forgiveness of sins? Jesus alone can provide it. God alone can grant it through Jesus our Lord. We can help you with any of those pursuits that I've just mentioned. Why don't you come to the front while we stand and sing this song? Number 8.